The House will come to order. Today is Tuesday, March 4th. This is the 17th day of the 2008 budget session of the 59th Wyoming Legislature. Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Alden, Anderson, Bagby, Berger, Blake, Brechtel, Brown, Buchanan, Childers, Kraft, Davison, Dirks, Dockstetter, Edmonds, Edwards, Esquivel F, Esquivel K, Gilmore, Gingery, Goggles, Hales, Hallinan, Hammonds, Harshman, Harvey, Harvey, Eichel, Illaway, Yagi, Jones, Jorgensen, Landon, Lockhart, Lubno, Madden, Martin, McComey, Mercer, Meyer, Miller, Millen, Olson, Peterson, Philp, Korberg, Samuelson, Simlick, Shepperson, Simpson, Slater, Stewart, Stubson, Teeters, Thompson, Throne, Wallace, Warren, White, Zwanitzer Dan, Zwanitzer Dave, Mr. Speaker, 60 present.
Representative McComey. Just a minute. Our prayer for the day will be offered by the very Reverend Representative Jerry Eichel. Representative Eichel.
Please join me in prayer. Our dear Father in heaven, this morning we can say these words of the psalmist David. In the morning, O Lord, you hear my voice. In the morning I lay my request before you and wait in expectation. Lord, we acknowledge your great love for us as we do ask for so many things. You are sovereign, yet in your greatness you have so much compassion and want to hear our prayers. So we ask today that you continue to guide our paths, our thoughts, and our decisions. May our deliberations today be only good for those that we represent. As this session winds down, help us put the right cap on things as we vote, as we consider differences with our associates on the other end of the Capitol, and as we concur. We thank you for your perfect love, and we pray these things in the name of Jesus. Amen.
The reading clerk will read the Journal Committee report.
Mr. Speaker, your Journal Committee reports that the Journal of February 3, 2008 has been read and recommends that it be approved. Signed, Representative Teeters, Representative Millen.
Members of the House, we are truly blessed today, as we have been every day that we've been here this session. Our clerical assistants are sitting up in the North Gallery. Sally Allen, Brenda Arzada, Bonnie Brown, Barbara Costa, Lynn Davis, Shirley Dickman, Janet Forsman, Karen Lippincott, Doris Loski, Eileen Oldenburg, Yvonne Quintal, and Peggy Smithson have been serving you all session long. Please let them know how you feel about that. Thank you, ladies, for making our lives fuller and far less complex. Representative Brechtel.
Mr. Speaker, privilege of the floor.
Please proceed.
Mr. Speaker, I've been very blessed for the last 36 years, my wife in the West Gallery.
Representative Dockstader.
Mr. Speaker, privilege of the floor.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to point up to the gallery to my left, your right, up in the top. We have the Star Valley Middle School Student Council. They've made the seven-hour bus trip over here to study Wyoming state government. I'd like you to welcome them, please. And if I might, if you would have just, for a moment, indulge a proud dad, the one on the far right in the blue shirt and red tie is my youngest son.
Representative McComey.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, on a more solemn note, our Education Secretary, Edith Russell, is in the intensive care unit with severe pneumonia, and I'd appreciate it, and she'd appreciate everybody's prayers, and let's hope that she has a very speedy recovery.
Representative Childers.
Mr. Speaker, she also serves the TRW committee, and please continue your prayers. But on a lighter note, I've been listening to everybody talk about how long they've been married, and unfortunately my anniversary's at a different time. We're never down here, so I think I'm going to announce that my wife turns the magic age to take care of Medicare this Saturday, and we have been married for 45 and a half years as of last Saturday.
Messages from the Senate.
Message number 237. Mr. Speaker, Senate File 22, School Facilities Amendments. The Senate failed to concur on the House amendments to the bills listed above by the vote indicated. Ayes 1, noes 28, excused 1. The Senate requests that a House appoint a conference committee, number 1, to meet with a like committee and with the Senate to report recommended amendments to the bill for final consideration by both houses. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 238. Mr. Speaker, the President appointed Senate conferees to meet with a like committee, number 1, from the House on amendments to Senate File 22. The Senate conferees are Senator Anderson, Chairman, Senator Coe, Senator Nicholas. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 239. Mr. Speaker, Senate File 69, Wildlife, Natural, and Resource Funding Amendments. The Senate failed to adopt the Joint Conference Committee number 1 report on the bill listed above by the vote indicated. Ayes 15, noes 15. The Senate requests the House appoint a new conference committee to meet with a like committee from the Senate. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 240. Mr. Speaker, the President appointed Senate conferees to meet with a like committee number 2 from the House. Amendments to Senate File 69. The Senate conferees are Senator Burns, Chairman Senator Geis, Senator Massey. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk.
Our doctor for the day will be Dr. John Haley from Cheyenne. Our nurses from the day are from the Wyoming State Hospital, Peggy Beasonson and Beverly Jensen. Doctor and ladies, thank you very much for your service to the state. We are now at that order of business of bills on second reading. The first bill for our consideration is Senate File 12.
Senate File 12, introduced by Senator Peterson, an act relating to liquor licenses, dispensing room products sold.
There is an amendment. Representative Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 12. Mr. Speaker, at the end of the presentation and explanation of the bill yesterday, the sponsor of the bill requested that we defeat the standing committee amendment. But as it turned out from the voice vote, it was ruled that it passed. That I found somewhat confusing, because basically what it added was magazines and periodicals to the things that could be sold in these dispensing rooms. And I had some question as to what the state's role in regulating what could be sold there, period, was. I thought, well, what if they want to sell Kewpie dolls? Is that something that they can't do in there? So I just didn't understand that. And then I, in visiting with my seatmate, he said he picked up a newspaper in such a place. And so we just couldn't see why that was so important to be deleted, and so have brought back an amendment to propose to the House that those be included as things that can be sold there.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Fellow representatives, I certainly rise in support of this amendment because I believe it accomplishes really what we need. And what we're attempting to do here, once again, is the newspapers, if you look at this, supplies, and then it allows the various magazines that we've discussed about to be put into a controlled environment. Because the problem you have the present time, anyone that comes into a convenience store that dispenses alcoholic beverages has access and can see these products. And what this bill is attempting to do without the standing committee amendment is allow those items to be moved into a controlled environment. Now, will passage of the bill automatically make the licensee or the person move the material into the controlled environment? The answer is no, but it affords an opportunity for that to go in. One of the biggest problems that we have with these kind of items is theft. And when I say theft, individuals that are younger ages gather around these magazine areas and can take these items. Is what it amounts to. And it puts an additional burden on the shop owner for these, so we have a controlled environment. There's one other aspect I want to bring up. municipalities could then go forward and look at this and say, okay, we will only have these items sold in a controlled room or an age-restricted room. That could also follow on this thing. But without this legislation being intact, as the original Senate File 12 came forward, we're handicapped in that regard. Everything stays like it is. Anybody, any age, anyone can come in to any establishment that sells the adult material. So I urge unquestionably support this amendment that's being offered at the present time to the floor.
Representative Brechtel.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise in opposition, obviously, to the to this amendment. What I'd really like to suggest to the body is give us an opportunity to try to come back next session, having had an opportunity to look at what the impact of this really is. Where do we want this kind of a policy to go? Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Dockstader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Disagree with our former good representative. I think what we need to do is simply make sure that we take these types of publications and give the business owner the opportunity to have a little control on where they're put and address the situation of these types of publications falling into the younger hands and addressing the problem of theft. So for the amendment for the bill. Thank you.
Representative Floyd Escobel.
For the bill and for the amendment, I guess. I'm not sure exactly where we're going now. But, you know, it seems to me that, you know, when we talk about local control and businessmen, you know, they should have the right to determine where different items are to be sold. I guess the other concern I have is to what extent are we moving in the direction of censorship and what kind of periodicals, what kind of newspapers can be sold? It just seems like we're moving into a big area there that I'm not sure we want to move to. Thank you.
Further discussion. The motion is to adopt second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 12. All of those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All of those opposed say no.
No.
Second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 12 has been adopted. The next bill for Senate File 12 having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a 3rd time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 19.
Senate File 19, introduced by Senator Fecht, an act relating to public health and safety regarding clandestine drug laboratories.
There are some amendments. Representative Throne.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I respectfully withdraw second reading amendment number 1. It's covered in a later amendment.
Second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 19 has been withdrawn. We are now on second reading amendment number 2. Representative Mercer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would move second reading amendment number 2 to House Bill or Senate File 19. What this does is it just fixes a statutory typographical error. 359136 does not exist, and so we put in the statute that it should have referred to.
The motion is to adopt second reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 19. All of those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye. All of those opposed to the motion signify by saying no. Second reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 19 has been adopted. We are now on second reading amendment number 3. Representative Mercer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I apologize for bringing 2 amendments so close together, but I move second reading amendment number 3 to House Bill or Senate File 19. Did it again. If you look on page 6, starting on line 1, it says the commission shall, by rule and regulation, establish standards for protection of the safety of law enforcement personnel during clandestine laboratory incident responses. There are going to be a lot more people than just law enforcement addressing these clandestine laboratories, like firefighters, maybe even DEQ people. So we need to make sure that we're covering the whole gamut of folks that might be showing up at these clandestine laboratories. So removing the term law enforcement and placing the term responding personnel in there clarifies that and offers the latitude that they need to make proper rules. Thank you.
Further discussion. The motion is to adopt second reading amendment number 3 to Senate File 19. All of those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All of those opposed say no. Second reading amendment number 3 to Senate File 19 has been adopted. We are now on second reading amendment number 4. Representative Throne.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to move second reading amendment number 4. And even though I'm standing next to the good majority floor leader, let me assure you that it's not as complicated as one of his amendments might be. If you look at your engrossed version on page 7, you'll notice that essentially what happened here is that the Senate put two amendments in to protect the property rights of property owners. And the problem is the two approaches conflict with each other. So that would create confusion if a property owner attempted to appeal or to challenge an order issued under this provision. So the purpose of the amendment is to make the procedural safeguards work. If you look at page 7, all the amendment does is it leaves subsection J. Subsection J allows the commission to develop rules to protect the due process rights. And so we're leaving that in. So if there are additional due process protections that are necessary for the property owners, the commission can do that according to rule. We're removing Romanet I and Romanet 3. And in an earlier amendment, we removed Romanet 2. And the reason this amendment proposes removing Romanet I and Romanet 3 is that they conflict with what comes later. So essentially, if everything stays in, we've set up a process that I think is only going to confuse property owners and confuse the courts that have to implement it. So then you shift over to page 9. And again, this is, we're just cleaning, we deleted the reference, we changed the procedures under J. If we remove those, we have to delete that reference to subsection J on page 9. Excuse me, I missed a page. On page 8, it refers to the incident commander's authority to issue an order. Well, the incident commander is not going to be doing that independently. They're going to be doing that on behalf of a political subdivision, whatever that entity might be. So to, again, make this section D work with E, F, G that come later, we cross-referenced political subdivision in here. And essentially, the rest of the amendments are to make the hearing process work, just cleaning up some language. And if you look on page 10, subsection G, it says, upon application of the political subdivision causing the order to be issued, the court shall order a hearing. Well, that's not really correct because the property owner is the one who wants the hearing and who has the right to a hearing. So we don't want to limit the procedural rights of the property owner by saying that they have to wait or suggesting that they have to wait for the political subdivision to request a hearing if there's a dispute over the order. And finally, the last amendment is just a lawyer thing. It's the rules of appellate procedure, not the rules of civil procedure, appeals from district court. So that's the amendment, and I would be happy to answer any questions.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It was suggested that we take out J1 and J3 because they conflict. Can you tell me what they conflict with, please?
Further discussion prior to the sponsor of the amendment. Representative Throne.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. If you look at Romanet I under subsection J, it says provision of written notice by certified mail to the real estate owner of the incident commander's intent to declare a site or premises uninhabitable. It refers to certified mail. Later, it talks about personal service. This also refers to the intent to declare a site. uninhabitable rather than the order itself, so it's confusing. Three may not conflict, but it's not necessary because the hearing right is described in detail later. I think essentially, Mr. Speaker, these different appeal provisions came in two separate amendments, if I tracked the history right on the other side, and they didn't quite fit together.
The motion is to adopt second reading amendment number 4 to Senate File 19. All of those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All of those opposed to the motion signify by saying no. Second reading amendment number 4 to Senate File 19 has been adopted. Senate File 19 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 24.
Senate File 24, introduced by the Labor Committee, an act relating to insurance regarding health insurance clinical trials.
Senate File 24, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 26.
Senate File 26, introduced by the Corporation Committee, an act relating to business entities, registered agents.
There is an amendment. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 26 and would like to divide the amendment, please. Division 1 would be lines 7, 8, and 9. Division 2 would be lines 1 through 6 and 10 through 16. Again, Division 1, lines 7 through 9. Division 2, lines 1 through 6 and 10 through 16.
That is in order. You will address amendment Division 1 first, I'm assuming.
Yes, I will, Mr. Speaker. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you go to page 16 of the bill, this is section 17-28-107, which are duties of the registered agent and duties of the entity. And I do like this bill in that it takes all of the registered agent requirements and puts them in one place as they apply to every entity. And I just want to take you through this. The registered agent shall maintain a physical address, accept service of process, maintain the address of record, register as a commercial agent if applicable, and then to the top of page 17. Maintain at the registered office the following information for each entity represented that's current up to 60 days of any change until their first annual report is accepted for filing, and then thereafter when the annual report is due for filing. So what that means is once they've filed their first annual report, the registered agent has to maintain the information that's in subparagraphs A, B, C, and A says the names and addresses of each entity's directors, officers, LLC, managers, managing partners, etc. B is the name, address, and business and telephone number of a natural person who's the designated agent to receive communication from the registered agent. That's fine. Subparagraph C is you need a copy of the written contract that creates this agency relationship between a registered agent and a natural person. Then you go over to page 18. That's a Romanet 6. That this one says that the registered agent has to at least once during any 13-month period successfully contact each domestic entity for which he is a registered agent. If the agent is part of or affiliated with an entity serving as registered agents in other states, a contract can be made through a central office. Great. Okay. I make the successful contact, but I'm not required to do anything. I'm not required to update my records because I already have to do that under Romanet 5, A, B, and C because I have to keep those names current. And according to the amendment yesterday on page 18, subparagraph B, I can sign a form with the entity that says the entity will keep that information. So why am I making a successful contact? Just because I can say I contacted the company, but I don't have to do anything once I make the contact other than keep information that says I made the contact. Okay, well, what if I don't make the successful contact? What am I supposed to do? Am I supposed to turn in my client? If I'm an attorney and a registered agent, I'm not going to do that. The Act doesn't tell me what I'm supposed to do if I don't make a successful contact. So I see no reason for subparagraph Romanet 6 on page 18. If someone can tell me that the reason is simply beyond we want you to be able to make contact with the entity you represent, well, but why? I'm not doing anything with the information. I already have to keep that information current, or the entity has agreed to do that, and that form is filed with the Secretary of State, so I don't have that responsibility. So if I've already given up that responsibility, why should I have to call them? Is a successful contact an answering machine? Hi, this is ABC Corporation. Leave a message. Oh, well, good. They still must exist. Somebody answered the phone. Well, and I don't mean to be flip about that, but it seems to me that there's no teeth in this requirement. It doesn't have anything beyond a feel-good thing of you were able to contact the company. But we really haven't considered what happens if no one's there and I can't contact the company, because this bill doesn't say that I have to turn them in or report that to the Secretary of State, and that raises some critical attorney-client issues if the registered agent is an attorney and the like. So Division 1 would simply delete Romanet 6, and the other body, as you recall, deleted lines 11 through 16 already.
Discussion relative to Division 1, Representative Dan Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Against Division 1, I'm not going to argue anything more than the good majority leader said, but if he wants some teeth in this, I would ask him to bring an amendment to put some teeth in it. We brought this bill to address fraud. We didn't bring this bill to make life easier on registered agents. And so maybe there needs to be some kind of successful, when you do contact, you have to report that. You keep it in your records. I don't think it's overly burdensome. I'm not going to argue that maybe it doesn't make sense to just make sure they're there and talk to a phone machine, but I think there's a better way, instead of letting the registered agent off the hook, to put some teeth in this, maybe on a third reading amendment that says, well, here's what you're going to do with it, not to just say you don't have to do it because we don't see a need. And so I'd ask you to vote against the division, and hopefully a third reading amendment can be arranged that puts some teeth into it. I think that's a better policy than just doing away with it. Thank you.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and for the amendment, and in response to the last speaker, let me just say we keep hearing that this has been brought for the purpose of preventing fraud. However, we can't hear an explanation as to these particular sections, how they're going to prevent fraud. And I think the good majority floor leader made his points and made them well, and I don't understand how the points that he made is going to enhance or increase or promote fraud. And until I hear some reason, that some substantive reason that fraud is going to be compromised or promoted by this, I just can't buy those arguments. So on and for the second reading amendment.
Representative Eichel.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. At this point, neither for nor against, I'm asking for a clarification. On line 10, it says, it refers to the registered agent must be able to or can produce information on how the contact was made. It seems that that goes beyond saying that the contact was made, but nothing has to be done with it. Doesn't that mean that there has to be some way to substantiate it? And it seems to go against what was said, that nothing has to be done about it. So I'm just asking for clarification. Thank you.
Representative Illaway.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I've been trying to, this bill's got lots of good stuff in it. And I think that on and against Division 1, I think
that it strengthens the bill. At least the registered agent has to make successfully contact each domestic entity for which he's a registered agent. One of the real problems is that if he doesn't make contact, and maybe we do need a second reading amendment on that, or a third reading amendment, that says what he does with that. But the real problem that we have is that in many cases the registered agent is not able to successfully make contact with that particular entity. There are some registered agents that have the registered agents for over 1,500 entities. And this is a way of the registered agent making sure that he is a registered agent for an entity that is real. So on and against Division One, just because it strengthens the bill.
Representative Stubson.
Mr. Speaker, just to respond to the question from the representative from Sheridan County, I think that's another problem with the bill is the record-keeping requirement for how contact was made, because under this bill you could really have a phone number. Who knows where it is, but you have a phone number. You make a call. Somebody answers. You put a note in your file, called the phone number, somebody answered, and you still have no idea. Is this a person off in Bermuda sitting there answering the phone for 5,000 corporations? You have no idea. If you send a registered letter to an address and it comes back that, yes, it was received, is that address the same home for 5,000 other entities? Is it a shell? Who knows? But you've complied with this provision, and that's just the problem. It doesn't advance the ball at all on figuring out whether these companies are fraudulent or not. It all it does is add another hoop that is easy to evade if you are a company that wants to defraud the people of Wyoming. Those provisions in this bill that require disclosure of information and of natural and a natural person, those are all aimed at this erasing the anonymity, making sure that the folks that set up corporations are responsible and answerable for their conduct. This provision, however, does not do that.
Representative Korberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and against the amendment, I do believe that this part, this new addition to this amendment, does strengthen this bill. And I think, irregardless of whether you know what's at the end of your telephone line or if you send it to an address and the letter that you've mailed to them during the 13-month period is accepted, I guess from my standpoint as a peace officer, that starts to build the case. And it I don't think it's any reflection on the registered agent, other than it is a contact where that letter was received. And if there's anything down the road that starts to question that still is a viable contact that law enforcement has to go to say this was in fact the address where your letter was received. And that gives them a starting point for further investigation. So I just don't see a downside to keeping this in the bill. So on and against the amendment.
Representative Jorgensen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd also like to speak against the amendment. If a registered agent gets what they and their conscience consider to be an unsatisfactory answer, they don't need to represent that entity. I guess that's where it falls for me. However, I'm not in that business and don't know how they exercise judgment. But I urge you to vote against this weakening. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Eichel.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The it's only upon the request from the Secretary of State or other proper authority that the registered agent would produce information on how the contact was made. Am I right to assume that the person asking, Secretary of State or other proper authority, will care about how about how that contact was made and won't go with some flimsy, wimpy response to that. And if that's the case, then I am opposed to this amendment.
Mr. Speaker, pro tem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. What a registered agent does in our law is they're the agent who accepts service of process. So when you have a lawsuit, somebody comes and delivers the papers to the registered agent. And that's what the registered agent's been, and that's what their official function is with respect to limited liabilities, corporations, limited partnerships, et cetera, in the state of Wyoming. This bill advances that, and they say that the registered agent should be a police officer to help stop fraud. But when you look at the way that the bill is drafted, it doesn't do that. Because you can go out, you can buy one of those internet phone services that gives you an area code for a phone number that goes to anywhere in the world. And the bill says you just have to make contact. So you pick up the phone number that they give you, you dial the phone number, it goes through the internet, and your client, whoever that may be, wherever they may be in the world, answers the phone, and you've made contact with them. Now, you've satisfied the requirements of the statute. What have you done to prevent any fraud? Absolutely nothing. And so why does it make sense then to put a nonsensical provision that has no effect in the statutes that won't do anything to prevent fraud? If we want to prevent fraud, then this approach that's in this bill isn't the way to do it. On and for the amendment.
Representative Dan Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know what our law currently states and what a registered agent is. And for those of you who are maybe unfamiliar, 70-80% of registered agents, I think, are mom and pops. You know, they see themselves in the mirror in the morning. The registered agents that were really affecting, commercial registered agents, more than 10, are pretty much those people who were, you know, setting up multiple corporations and those large, somewhat large law firms that are the registered agents for any number of people. And it's certainly not my intent to make life harder for some of the, you know, the decent law firms in our state. And these are the people, they know who their clients are. They don't have any problems when they pick up the phone and say, hey, just checking in. But maybe philosophically, the registered agent, and maybe we don't want to put them here, but in my mind, they're the safety check on the whole process. You can have a corporation, now that we've allowed them to file stuff directly with the Secretary of State and bypass the registered agent, they can submit, you know, a list of fraudulent names every year. The Secretary of State isn't going to call and check, you know, 50,000 corporations to make sure all these people actually exist. They can send any piece of paper they want with any names they want, any phone numbers, and just hope they don't get caught. And then when, you know, when they do get caught by the FBI or whatever, they call the phone numbers, find these names, they don't exist. And so philosophically, the registered agent, they are registered, they go through a process. I mean, help me out. You can't be, anybody just can't be a registered agent. You have to go through some kind of certification process. Anybody can be a registered agent? Oh. Well, okay. I'm going to miss that argument then. But I was going so well there. But I guess this, if you are a decent registered agent and you're checking your client and something seems fishy, like, you know, you're calling some foreign number and it's an answering machine, that gives you cause to be alarmed, and then the registered agent, the good operating registered agents, are going to be like, something's not right here, maybe I should get out. And that's why this is in the bill, to discourage bad operating registered agents. And yes, maybe it does put a little bit more of a burden on checking with your client once a year, but now that they're filing with the Secretary of State anyway, or they can through certification, it's probably good just to make sure. I mean, I know some of your firms have 700 clients to represent, but you have people you hire to, you know, check into their corporations once a year and just make sure everything's okay. And I'm going to get off my soapbox now. Thank you.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have threatened the last speaker that if he keeps this up, I'm going to turn my secretaries loose on him. And it won't be pretty.
Further discussion prior to the sponsor of the amendment. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Any individual who's at least 18 years of age, resides in this state, and whose business office is identical with the registered office may be a registered agent. And then along with a domestic business entity, and it goes beyond there. But really, what does the provision do? It doesn't require anything. The only possible thing I could think of is if the registered agent is not an attorney, and it's not going to make an attorney think, well, maybe I should stop representing this company. It might, but most of the problem comes when the registered agent is not an attorney. It's a registered agent. It's a commercial registered agent, and they're not attorneys. They don't care. What we've perpetuated is registered agents who aren't attorneys, who don't have any of that kind of attorney-client privilege issue. They're just registered agents. So, okay, I represent 1,500 companies, and I have to call each one of them every year, and I have to document that. So if there's fraud detected, the Secretary of State might request from me my record of contact. And I work, you know, I'm defrauding the state. I'm setting up sham corporations. So I'm certainly going to defraud my records about the contact that I made and show that, I mean, what's to say that the information is correct? Well, if it isn't correct, then the Secretary of State's office can attempt to prove that it wasn't, and that helps build their case. But I still say it doesn't do anything for record-keeping purposes, because that's already required under paragraph Romanet 5 on page 17. That the information that's requested there is the same information the registered agent would use to attempt to contact the company. The telephone number of the director or the officer or the designated agent to receive communication. We've got the information. This does nothing but place the mom-and-pop registered agent in a position where on page 21 of the bill, or page 21, each violation is may impose a civil penalty not to exceed $500. Okay, so if I willfully say I'm not going to do that, the Secretary of State can revoke the registration of the company I represent. Is that fair? Because the registered agent didn't do what they were supposed to do? No. This is page 21, line 3. This is for any penalty. May deny or revoke any registration, require enhanced record keeping, and refuse to accept filings for business entities served by a registered agent if the registered agent, etc. Romanet 4 on line 21, has failed, willfully violated or willfully failed to comply with any provisions of this chapter. It just doesn't make sense. It's extraneous. It imposes a burden that is unfair. And I can't think of any other business where somebody's required to make telephone calls and document it in their records. I mean, if somebody can point to any business that's required to do that, please let me know. Thank you.
The motion is to adopt Division 1 to Second Reading Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 26. That is on your amendment, lines 7, 8, and 9. All of those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All of those opposed to the motion signify by saying no. Division 1 to Second Reading Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 26 has been adopted. Division being called. All of those in favor of Division 1, please stand. Division 1 to Second Reading Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 26 has been adopted. We are now on Division 2. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Division 2, the first part of it, page 17, line 10. This is the record-keeping requirement where the registered agent has to keep record of the names and addresses of each entity's directors, officers, etc. The term officers to me is too broad, because under the Act, you can create as many officers as you want. You can have the 15th senior vice president of, you know, janitorial service if you want. So I think it ought to be president, vice president, secretary, and treasurer as those officers, which are typically the four main officers. Page 18, line 24. Yesterday, we adopted the second Committee of the Whole amendment that rewrote subparagraph B. On page 18, the last two lines reads, if the information is filed with the Secretary of State, then the registered agent has complied with the requirement to maintain such information under this section. Well, that sentence does not fully comport with the changes we made to the paragraph, and I believe it needs to read that if the information or form acknowledging the entity's election is filed with the Secretary of State, then the registered agent has complied. Because you can comply in two ways. Filing the form where the entity agrees the entity will provide that information, or the entity files the information if you don't have that agreement. And I think that's consistent with the amendment we made to subparagraph B and needs to be in there. Page 20, line 13, this is a change we made to Senate File 18, where we're talking about a subpoena, that it needs to be validly issued and enforceable, not just a validly issued subpoena. And then there's a typo on page 22, line 5. It should have said from rather than for. I stand for any questions, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have just a clarifying question on the amendment where it says delete officers and insert four officers. I have a question on a limited liability corporation. You may not have all four officers, and so it's sort of a question when you don't have directors, officers, and so forth. Just put in none, I guess, and if you got the president and CEO, I've got a small limited liability corporation, and I really only have two officers on it, and we kind of cover the waterfront. What do you do if you don't have all four of those as an example? You just put in none, I guess. Just clarification for me in case I ask.
Further discussion. Representative Meyer.
Mr. Speaker, I have a problem with deleting this from the standpoint that even with officers, it could be anyone. You could choose the janitor to be one of your officers because you give them a name and you put a name down and there's no indication as to who they are within that organization anyway. I suggest we leave this the way it is in the present bill and not take it out. When we delineate, we run into problems, just as the speaker before me presented. They may not have these specific names, the president, vice president, secretary, or treasurer. Why not leave it officers? Again, if we don't know anymore if someone is put down as president or as vice president, we don't know who those people are. Let's leave the bill like it is. We need this bill. It is very important. We have people now who are just answering phones, who have no contact with the people they're working for. We need to stop the money laundering and the fraudulent activity that is happening in this state. We had testimony from a former FBI agent who says they can't serve papers on anyone in the state of Wyoming, because they don't know who they are. I suggest we leave this and not delineate it. We may create more problems than we have right now. I urge you to defeat this amendment.
Representative Illaway.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, I think you can have hundreds of officers. So I'm not as concerned with officers. I think in some cases we may want to strengthen it a little bit more, but the four that were noted in the amendment appear to be fine. And to answer the good representative from House District 57, on page 17, it does say, names and addresses of each entity's directors, officers, limited liability company managers, managing partners, trustees, or persons serving in a similar capacity. So I think that takes care of Representative from House District 57's comments. We've tried to make it broad, so I'd urge the adoption.
Representative Brown.
Well, Mr. Speaker, we may be overlooking another part of the Model Business Corporation Act that we've had for a long time. 1716-840 lists required officers for a corporation. And Well, I was doing well, Mr. Speaker. I was trying to do it on the fly, but 1716-840 says a corporation has the officers described in its bylaws or appointed by the board of directors in accordance with the bylaws. And so it doesn't really delineate the president and secretary. I tell you, that really puzzles me because I know somewhere in here it says that the same person can't be the president and secretary. And it does, 1716-842 says that an officer with discretionary authority, and I think that's what we're trying to get at, shall discharge his duties. There's a whole list of them in there, but number one is in good faith. And so maybe I come up here and kind of shoot a blank, Mr. Speaker.
For your first and second time, Representative Brown. Further discussion prior to the sponsor of the amendment. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move to divide the amendment further. Division 2 would be lines 1 through 6. Division 3 would be lines 10 through 16. And, Mr. Speaker, I only do that because I think they're separate issues, and I hate to lose the amendments in Division 3 to the question about Division 2.
Further discussion on Division 2.
Mr. Speaker, I don't disagree with the argument that you shouldn't delineate the officers, but I more strongly disagree with requiring a listing of all the officers, which is what it said. Maybe it should say the top five officers. I mean, even if you look at the what was cited about 1716-840 that says, you know, you have the officers that are designated in your articles of organization and your bylaws. Well, you might not have any. Or you might not have bylaws. And your articles might not list them all. So there are all kinds of ways around this. And an LLC doesn't need officers. It can just have managers. So vote your conscience on Division 2. On Division 3, I think those are important to clarify in that one. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The motion is to adopt Division 2. On your amendment, that is lines 1 through 6. The motion is to adopt Division 2 to second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 26. All of those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All of those opposed signify by saying no.
No.
Division 2 to second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 26 has failed. We are now on Division 3. Question being called. Division 3 is on your amendment, lines 10 through 16. All of those in favor of Division 3 to second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 26 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All of those opposed signify by saying no.
No.
Division 3 to second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 26 has been adopted. Senate File 26 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 27.
Senate File 27, introduced by Senator Ross, an act relating to counties regarding county nuisance abatement authority.
There are some amendments. Representative Samuelson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, it's not very often that you can have the perfect amendment to basically maybe even save the world. Well, this is an extremely serious bill, Mr. Speaker. The other day we were having quite a debate on it, and a lot of our different friends were coming to the microphone, and you just say, you know, there ought to be a law to kind of slow these guys down and these gals down. And I talked to the prime sponsor of this amendment. I didn't really tell him what 33.5 referred to, and you know, I was trying to keep it a secret until after we voted on it. And there's a couple of these folks have looked this up, and you know, it's kind of okay to have fun with these things. And Mr. Speaker, has the Castle Doctrine passed yet? Okay.
Point of order, Mr. Speaker. Point of order.
And your point is, Mr. Majority Floor Leader?
I would. Mr. Speaker, the point of order is that the amendment is not germane to the bill and does not include sheep herders.
Mr. Speaker, this is anybody that could be a nuisance under this 33-5. I see the new representative from Casper is looking this up, but I think we owe this to the Senate to, after we had a triple truck bill last year that was attached to the sexual predator bills or laws of the state, they deserve this, and there are some extremely good amendments coming up on this bill. If you haven't looked this up yet, 33-5 does refer to attorneys at law. I guess the way this would be interpreted, Mr. Speaker, is that if some of these folks get out of hand, we just call up our county commissioners, have them pass a resolution, and we can probably have them abated. So, Mr. Speaker, I think this, and you, if you let your mind work on this, I think this amendment could possibly save the world. So if there's no debate on this, Mr. Speaker, I would call for the question.
Further discussion on the Shakespearean amendment. The motion is to adopt second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 27. All of those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All of those opposed to the motion signify by saying no.
No.
Second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 27 has failed. We are now on second reading amendment number 2. Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. That's a tough act to follow there, but this is a serious amendment here. It's just some clarification. What we do here, make sure you have the corrected copy number 2. We've had a couple of fine lawyers on the floor here get involved with this and improve the language of the bill. What we do here, lines 2, we remove the Illaway Amendment that added the part about the industrial facilities. This is added later on lines 9 through 15. What we're doing on page 2 in the bill, lines 13 and 14, we're removing those two lines, and then we're adding, we're deleting on line 15 the line through nuisance, and then we're inserting, no resolution issued pursuant to this paragraph shall regulate any permitted industrial facility. That's the part that was in the Committee of the Whole Amendment, or the use or occupancy reasonably necessary to the extraction or production of the mineral resources. So if someone is proposing an oil and gas well there that's permitted by the other regulatory agencies in Wyoming, that cannot be considered a nuisance. So I ask for your favorable consideration of this amendment, and I stand for any questions.
Further discussion. Question being called. The motion is to adopt second reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 27. All of those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All of those opposed to the motion signify by saying no. Second reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 27 has been adopted. We are now on second reading amendment number 3. Representative Brown.
Mr. Speaker, I withdraw second reading amendment number 3 to Senate File 27.
Second reading amendment number 3 to Senate File 27 has been withdrawn. We are now on second reading amendment number 4. Mr. Speaker, pro tem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move second reading amendment number 4 to Senate File 27. This deals with page 2, lines 10 through 12 of the bill, which says, whoever violates a resolution passed pursuant to this paragraph shall be fined not more than $750 for each offense. And so I read that, and I got to thinking, well, what the heck does that mean? What's an offense? How many offenses? Is each offense a continuing offense? Is each day that you offend a continuing offense and a separate offense? Is $750 reasonable for each day that it's a continuing offense? If you prosecute somebody once and they pay a $750 fine, are they subject to double jeopardy limitations and so that you can't prosecute them again, so they just pay the $750 and leave the nuisance out there unabated, immune from any further prosecution. So to answer all of those questions, I propose the following language. Each day shall constitute a separate violation until the offender submits a plan to abate the nuisance that is accepted by the Board of County Commissioners. It also lowers the fine from $750 per offense to $100 per offense, so that if somebody has an offense out there, it's a nuisance, it goes unabated for a long period of time, they're obstinate about it, that person can be charged with an offense for each day it's a separate violation, so that it gets their attention, so that they don't have to just pay a one-time fine. But I thought that $100 a day was more reasonable than $750 a day.
Further discussion. The motion is to adopt second reading amendment number 4 to Senate File 27. All of those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All of those opposed to the motion signify by saying no. Second reading amendment number 4 to Senate File 27 has been adopted. We are now on second reading amendment number 5. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move second reading amendment number 5 to Senate File 27. Ladies and gentlemen, this brings in the due process that we now see in the clandestine drug laboratories remediation bill into the nuisance abatement bill. And you'll see that it puts in the new subsection 18.2.115, and it simply requires the Board of County Commissioners to, by resolution, establish standards for determining when a site may be declared a nuisance. That seems pretty simple to me. Health and safety. Subparagraph B, the board may issue an order declaring a property to be a nuisance, and they shall provide written notice to the owner describing with specificity the nature of the nuisance and the steps required for abatement. The order shall be in writing, shall state the grounds for the order, and shall be filed in the clerk of district court's office. A copy of the order shall be served on the owner, and they have 20 days to answer. In subparagraph C, They may file an answer denying the existence of any of the allegations in the order, and if no answer is filed, the court shall affirm the order declaring the site a nuisance and fix a time when the order shall be enforced. That goes over to the top of page 2. If the answer is filed and served, the court shall hear and determine the issues raised as set forth in subsection D. And D is that section that the court shall order a hearing within 20 days from the date of filing the answer. This is a quick process. 20 days to answer and 20 days for a hearing. If the court sustains all or any part of the order, the court shall fix a time within which all or any part of the order so sustained shall be enforced. Otherwise, the court shall annul or set aside any portion of the order declaring the property to be a nuisance, not sustained. And then it talks about appeal. And then the rest are conforming amendments. I mean, and truly, we're talking about property rights here, folks, and there should be some due process tied to nuisance and abatement. And these are really minimal due processes that are afforded to landowners. But you get notice, you have an opportunity to answer, you can go to court within a short amount of time, and I think it's much better than simply slapping somebody with an order that they have to comply with, subject to a $100 a day penalty unless you come up with some remediation plan. Thank you.
Further discussion. Representative Brown.
Mr. Speaker, I commend the bringer of this amendment. I think it introduces due process into it, solves the problems that I was complaining about the other day, and puts this bill in a position where it has a chance of being constitutional. And as it stood before, it wasn't. So on and for the amendment.
Further discussion. The motion is to adopt second reading amendment number 5 to Senate File 27. All of those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All of those opposed signify by saying no. Senate File 27, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 29.
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Illoway.
Mr. Speaker, I don't know enough law, but can I ask for an injunction from some of these wonderful friends of mine that are attorneys and ask them to stop piddling?
Only by written order.
Mr. Speaker, point of order. The answer is no.
We are back on that order of business of bills on second reading. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 29.
Senate File 29, introduced by Senator Coe, an act relating to Wyoming Public Library Endowment Challenge Program.
Senate File 29, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 31.
Senate File 31, introduced by Senator Hastert, an act relating to domestic violence counseling period.
Senate File 31, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 40.
Senate File 40, introduced by Senator Ross, an act relating to amendments to the Uniform Trust Code.
Senate File 40, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 47.
Senate File 47, introduced by the Select Development Program, an act relating to state institutions regarding the Wyoming State Training School amendments.
Senate File 47, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 54.
Senate File 54, introduced by the Management Council, an act relating to school finance rebated recapture.
Senate File 54, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 62.
Senate File 62, introduced by the Labor Committee, an act relating to emergency medical technicians.
Senate File 62, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 65.
Senate File 65, introduced by the Judiciary, an act relating to criminal procedure, post-conviction relief petitions, DNA evidence.
There is an amendment. Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 65. Ladies and gentlemen, This appears on page 5 of the bill and would delete the entire subparagraph D. Now, what bothers me about this is that here we're talking about, what's the name of this thing? Post-conviction relief DNA evidence. We're talking about somebody who's been convicted, who's been imprisoned, suffered whatever criminal penalty has been assessed against them, and subsequent to that wants to use DNA evidence to exonerate themselves. And this bill says that a court may not order DNA testing for the purpose of determining whether they ought to be exonerated or not if their trial or plea of guilty or nolo contendere occurred after January 1, 2000, and the person didn't request DNA evidence at the time. And then it says, well, it didn't request it at the time, or as a result of lack of diligence, or unless the failure is found to be the result of ineffective assistance of counsel. And that's the part of this that really caught my eye to begin with. And then as I looked at this more and more, Here's what really troubles me about it. Facts are facts. And if a fact exists, I don't like to suppress it. I don't like to create some contrived or artificial situation where a fact is not available to a court. Now, I don't know how many reasons there might be. I can think of several, but I'm sure I can't think of them all. Reasons why somebody who either had a trial or pled guilty or pled nolo contendere after January 1, 2000 did not request DNA testing or DNA evidence. But it could happen. And so then they're out on this. If they didn't, is to say, well, I had ineffective assistance of counsel. Well, what's that going to do? It's going to drive every defense attorney in every case to, it's kind of like the thing that the doctors complain about all the time. It's going to drive every attorney in every case, no matter what the deal is, to request DNA testing. Because the alternative is that they're ineffectively representing their counsel, or their client. And then beyond that, it's going to drive some clients to a position where they're out, their way to get this evidence in or to get this DNA testing done is to assert that they received ineffective assistance of counsel. And believe me, that gets ugly in a world, in a hurry. And we've had some of our best public defenders, one in particular I could name who's done marvelous defense work. It's work that I doubt that anybody in this room would want, defending death row inmates for some time in Wyoming. And we have to give those people effective assistance of counsel. We're just required by the Constitution to do that. And we have one individual in the state in particular who's done that for a long time. He's the best trial lawyer in the state, probably. When I was president of the bar, he was on the criminal rules committee, and the prosecutors had been beating up on him so bad, he quit. He said, I'm not going to be on it anymore. And one of the first things I had to do as president of the bar, at the request of the prosecutors, was go talk him into being back on the committee. And I made him promise they'd stop beating up on him because he's the best trial lawyer in the state. Well, this puts him in a position where if somebody's desperate enough, they attack him and say he provided me ineffective assistance of counsel. And these attacks are ugly, and if they can succeed in some way or another, then maybe they can have the DNA testing. Now, it cuts another way, and this is the one that troubles me the most, is that some defense lawyer who's trying to build in an error in the record and leave an error in the record so that if he loses the case, he's got a chance to do it over again, will on purpose not order DNA testing. And by on purpose not ordering DNA testing, he has then left himself open to stand as a martyr later under those accusations. You were ineffective in counseling your client, and he sits on the witness stand and says, yeah, I was. Now, we see this go on, especially in death penalty cases. That is one of the last desperate gambits in these deals, is ineffective assistance of counsel. We have seen cases in the past where defense attorneys purposely neglected to do something so that if they lost the case, there was a chance to have it over again by being accused of ineffective assistance of counsel, admitting that that's the case, and then the case gets reversed and has to start all over again. So I just think there are multiple opportunities for mischief in here. The more I read it, the more I thought about it, the more troubled I was. So there's my amendment to simply delete that provision, and which would leave it to say that DNA testing or to present DNA evidence for strategic or tactical reasons is available. And as I say, a fact's a fact, and if the DNA evidence is there, I just don't like to see it suppressed and not considered by the court.
Representative Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm indifferent on the amendment. I just wanted to make sure the body understood why we picked January 1st, 2000. And just to back up, yesterday when the good gentleman from Rollins and I presented the bill, we worked this all last summer, and I never mentioned that the person that's heavily responsible for this is the Sheridan County attorney, worked very diligently to help us with this bill. He is one of the leading experts in the nation on DNA testing and actually has written the textbook on the subject matter for when you're doing DNA testing for court cases, which is quite impressive that we have someone in Wyoming that is one of the leading experts and that was able to assist us. And it was his suggestion that we pick a date, and his suggestion was January 1, 2000. Before 2000, people weren't real clear how we were going to use DNA evidence. And so some cases did get messed up, and that's why some of these cases come back now and why these type of bills are needed across the nation, because some people potentially were found guilty when they were not, because we were dealing with a new piece of evidence that we had never dealt with before. But by the year 2000, we're pretty good at it. It's very rare that you find that we're not doing it extremely well. And so that was the reason for picking the year 2000, because we wanted to make sure that we were dealing with the people that we meant to deal with and not opening the door for those that wanted a second bite at the apple. They have all the opportunity nowadays to come in and to present, but you know, I'm indifferent. It doesn't kill the bill. It doesn't do anything, really. So if you take it out, that's fine. If you leave it in, that's fine, too.
Further discussion prior to the sponsor. Representative Brown.
Mr. Speaker, I didn't hear anything negative there. And as I say, a fact's a fact, so I would urge you to support this amendment.
The motion is to adopt second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 65. All of those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 65 has been adopted. Senate File 65 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move that the House recess until 1:30. There is a program in the rotunda beginning at 11:30, and we had indicated that we would recess prior to that time.
You have heard the motion. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. We stand in recess until 1:30 p.m. today.